Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
Tyler, make a wish. It's 11:11. I'm David Bax.
Try to guess what my wish was.
No, I don't want to say it out loud because then it won't come true.
It already hasn't.
What did I say? I'm David Bax.
Yes, there we go. And thank you for listening. David, how you doing aside from feeling silly?
I'm not feeling silly. I just like when it's 11:11, you have to seize the moment. It only lasts a minute.
Yeah. Carpe diem.
You got to make that wish.
Yeah.
And I also, because I have always kept my phone on military time, cause it just seems to my brain that just seems more logical. There's only one 11:11 a day for me.
Right.
There's not two.
Yeah.
There's just the one in the morning.
Yeah.
We're a rare morning record for us. Late morning, but we're normally late night recorders.
Yeah, this is not my time of day. Especially because I woke up oddly early this morning and couldn't get back to sleep.
I feel like the listeners are gonna get sick of us talking about a recording schedule, but it is really like it feels like since the end of August, late August, early September, like the Olivier Assayas movie. Late August, early September. Since then, our schedule has just been fucked up, and it's going to keep being fucked up until after the Oscars, probably.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
Yeah, it's just between vacations and film festivals and holidays.
Yeah,
we're recording all kinds of weird times. We're recording this episode on a Sunday morning, and but I've also been up for a while.
Okay.
Been awake for a while because I got up and I walked the dog and exercised and stuff like that.
I assume you did that just like in total silence,
kind
of in a zen type of thing.
It's funny you should mention it.
Oh, okay.
Because while I was doing it, I was listening to my tweakedaudio.com earbuds.
Oh, that
makes
sense. You
see, listeners, tweakedaudio.com is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day. Like I said, I was using them today. I was listening to the new album by a band that I've known of for a few years. They have a new album coming out. I don't know how to pronounce their name.
Okay.
How would you say this, Tyler?
Obsequiae?
Obsequiae? Okay. But they're like a black metal band. They have a new album out. Sounded great on my, listeners, it's O-B-S-E-Q-U-I-A-E. Obsequiae. Something like that.
Obsequiae or obsequiae.
Yeah. But they're really good, and it sounded great on my tweakedaudio.com earbuds. Those are available at a low, low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low, low price and no shipping charges. So please go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Is it off-putting when someone goes off script?
You had to make that wish. You know? I mean, fine. Next time it's 11:11, I won't alert you to it.
All right.
And your wish will go unmade.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Tyler?
Yes.
Let's get into it, shall we? We have a very fun, this is a season of serious, like, end of decade episodes.
But a time of reflection day.
And we'll have, of course, we'll have, like, a holiday episode as well. We have a lot of, like, sort of rituals and traditions that we observe on the podcast this time every year. But we found some time for just a fun one.
Yes.
And it was suggested it was suggested by our very fun guest, whom I think you were going to introduce right now.
Well, you're correct, David. Okay. I've got good news for you. He's been on before. It's been a while because he moved away because he decided he's got, you know, better things to do or whatever. It is, our own favorite private dick, Ryan O'Leary. Ryan, how you doing?
Hi, Tyler. Actually, it's been so long that I moved here and moved away since I've been on the show proper.
Is that true? Oh, yeah. That's right, because we had you. That's right.
Yes.
We had you for commentaries when you lived here. A lot of commentaries. That's right.
Right.
Yes.
You're also, Ryan, thank you for being here. You're also a filmmaker.
Well, thanks for flying me out.
Yeah. But yeah, Tyler likes to introduce you as a private dick because that's how you pay the bills. But you're a filmmaker.
Yeah.
And you're the thing. I know filmmakers. I know other filmmakers. I only know one private detective. So that is how I'm going to think of this guy.
But you're in town with a short film.
Yes.
That played at a festival, the Sherman Oaks Film Festival Friday night.
Correct.
I'm sorry I wasn't there.
Yeah. Thanks for your support, guys.
You're here, right? This is our version of support.
Before we get into the very fun topic, tell us about your short film.
Sure. It's a short film that was adapted from what was supposed to be my second feature film, which came very close to getting fully financed back in 2016. We had a few pretty decent, recognizable actors attached. Anyway, the money fell through for the most part. And I'm going to avoid saying the stuff that can make someone Google everything that actually happened. But if you look up my name and The Lost Year and Variety, you can see who was attached at one point. One of those people, being the lead actor who fell through in a pretty crappy way and kind of boned us on a few things. But anyway, so we still had like a chunk of money from that feature, and about a year or so after not making any progress, my one producer suggested adapting it into a short film, which usually I think when you do that, you have like this key centerpiece scene that you could just like knock out of the park. The average scene length in this feature is probably like a quarter to half a page. It's a lot of tight little scenes that feed into each other. So we couldn't really do that. So at first I wasn't into the idea, but then I kind of figured out an angle for it and brought it down to this 14-minute short. And we were lucky enough where a couple of the actors who were attached stayed through for the short, and we ended up getting like a ridiculously overqualified cast. So we had Reed Bernays in it, who won a Tony Award a couple years ago, Kathy Curtin, who's on Orange is the New Black, Stranger Things, Insecure. She's in a ton of stuff. She has like three lines in it and showed up. Libe Barrar is in one scene at the very beginning. She's in 1 minute of the film, and she was on Sneaky Pete. But yeah, we ended up getting this great cast, and just so I don't feel bad, we have a Gracie Gillum, who's an awesome actress, who's in these Disney Teen Beach movies, and then our lead is Sam Bartholomew, which I learned at our Q&A the other day, despite the fact that the first time I Skyped with him, I'm like, how do I say your last name? It's not Bartholomew, but I'm not going to try to say it the way he did then, because I will botch it. You can look it up. It's a challenging one, but Sam's awesome guy. He was on
Bartholomeus?
It was close to that, but
I've
corrected people with my pronunciation over the last couple of years, and then it was just crushing at the Q&A when he introduced himself. But he was on Star Trek Discovery with, I believe, friend of the show Doug Jones.
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. So we got this really overqualified cast. We shot the short in 3 days, but since we filmed it in December, it wasn't finished for that year's festival deadline. So it's been almost 2 years since we shot it, and it's getting around this year. But it's been fun taking it around, and I've learned a lot about what happens to short films when they're played at film festivals.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that in a second, but first off, I want to tell you, Q&A wise, don't feel bad about mispronouncing your actor's name, because I'm reminded of a year ago at the Q&A after the screening of Bird Box.
That's right.
When the director, Susanna Beer, Beer? In the cast is the actor David Desmalchian, which is not, it's a mouthful of a last name, and she said something like Delmstatchian or something, and I just looked over at him and he was laughing.
Yeah, of course.
It happens even to people who are premiering Netflix movies that will go on to inspire memes at the AFI Film Festival.
I think an even worse version that I heard, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, oddly enough, but the guy who wrote Perks of Being a Wallflower, who also directed the movie, my friend went to a book release for, I want to say, either his wife's book or his book, and one of the actors who has a supporting role in that movie, and this was only like 2 years after it came out, was there and went to say hi to him after, and he didn't realize who it was. And it was someone with like a decent amount of screen time.
I remember a few years ago on the show, we had Bill Duke on, and I wanted to talk to him about like directing episodes in like TV movies of Nero Wolfe, because I love that show. And it's not that he forgot that he did it, but he was just like, he enjoyed it, but it was just kind of a gig for him. So he didn't really have any stories or anything to tell. And I was just like, oh, that's a bummer. But then I realized, like, yeah, that's just kind of how it is. Like, there will be people, honestly, who listeners of the show who will reference something that you or I have said. I'm like, I don't remember that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that, I mean, that happens like really recently. Like people will comment on the past week's episode on Twitter and I'll be like, I'm sorry, what are you referring to? Yeah. But, last one of these type of stories, and I will absolutely not name names here, of who said this, but at the last year at the Los Angeles Online Film Critics Society award show, the way it works is that a member, each category is introduced by a member of the critics group. And someone, I won't say who, was introducing a category in which Alex Wolff was nominated and referred to him as Nat Wolff.
Here's the thing. Are you so invested in either of the Wolves that you're going to get them mixed up?
Yeah, apparently.
I've got an Alex Wolff story.
Okay.
So he was a featured guest at the San Antonio Film Festival this year. And one of the actresses from my film, apparently, I think she was on the Naked Brothers band with him, I want to say. Okay. And he posted a picture on Instagram the night before of him with her. So I'm like, oh, I should probably talk to him. Anyway, I ended up spending a decent amount of time with him into the night. And my friend slash producer wasn't feeling well and went to bed early. So I'm out with Alex Wolff, and this is going to take a second for me to pull up, so I won't do it right now. It was late at night, and I'm like, would you want to wake up my friend doing the noise from Hereditary? And he was really into the idea, so we snuck into the hotel room, and he woke up my friend like 2 inches from his face and splashed a little water on him, making that noise. Anyway, I got a picture of Alex Wolff in bed with my friend Dan, and he was surprisingly very down, because I said it to him, and he's like, oh, it sounds kind of cool, and then he found me like a half an hour later, and he was just pumped. He's like, I want to do this. That's the idea. So it was really cool, and that was my experience with the Wolfman.
Sure.
Now, before we get into the topic, I wanted to, I said I was going to come back to ask you, you had some stories about the difficulties of presenting a short film at these sort of short film festivals and whatnot.
Yeah, there's a number of them that I guess, because it's been a while since I had a short that I tried to take, because we did The Backseat, did a festival run, it being a feature. There's certain things that they don't screw up as much, such as the aspect ratio.
Mm-hmm.
But with this short, is like, you know, we shot it in scope, so it's a wider ratio. And one issue that's come up at pretty good festivals, too, and I know how it happens. So what a lot of them will do to make a smooth experience, whether it be for a short film block or a feature film block, they'll go into Adobe or Avid and put everything onto one timeline and maybe put bumpers between the films. And I think when they do that, they don't always check the original ratio of the film. And so what happens is you end up having it stretched or with the sides cut off. And the last shot of our short, like a quarter of Reed Birney, or, you know, one of our main actors, you don't see that part of his face. And it's happened like 4 or 5 times out of like probably about 30 screenings. So it doesn't happen too much, but it is a bummer because like we shot it that way for a reason. And it's not even like a little arts. It's just getting certain information across, like what they, like with the Simpsons, you know, controversy with Disney Plus. It's like,
which they said they, by like in January, they'll fix, which is,
now, do you know if it's true? Cause I only heard this from one source, but I heard that that won't be in HD though. Is the thing. I hope that's not the case. Not that I think I'm going to watch it. But
I mean, early Simpsons wouldn't have been finished in HD.
Yeah, right.
So who cares?
Yeah, like, I guess you could still, I don't know. I feel like you could still remaster it in some way, but
I don't know. Cause it's not, it doesn't exist on film. It's not like going back and, you know, an old show that never aired in HD, but was shot on film. You could do HD, but if it was shot and finished in video, like I think, a while ago, Tyler and I were talking about The Critic, like as like I, when I was getting rid of a lot of like DVDs that I had, I was like, well, I'm not going to get rid of my Critic set because it's not going to get any better. Like it's always going to be in standard def. So I would almost rather see early Simpsons in standard def because that's what it was finished in. As opposed to some fake up-resing thing. But so I have questions about the technical aspects. That's what people really tune into this podcast for. So at a short film festival, like the, so the Sherman Oaks Film Festival is not a short film festival, but it has a shorts program.
A lot of it's shorts.
Your short, which is called The Lost Weekend,
yes,
is, and that's very cute that the feature was called The Lost Year and you cut it down.
Yeah, cut it down. Lost to that, which also maybe not the best idea when there's already a pretty famous Billy Wilder movie called that, but it's also
best
fun.
Picture and various other things.
Yeah. But that reminds me of when, who was it? I think it was Kino who put out two versions of the Mario Bava Black Sunday. They put out the original like Italian cut with like the full like blood and like, you know, people's faces burning and all the crazy stuff. And then when they put out the like American, the edited American release, the cover art is just a cropped version of the art from the Italian release. Anyway, so The Lost We Can Hear is being presented in a block of shorts.
Usually. Sometimes it'll be packaged right before a feature and be the only short or with one other short before a feature.
So in either case, for a film festival, what are you required, in what format are you required to deliver?
It varies drastically. So the bigger, nicer festivals will want a DCP or something. And that happened with, what is it, the San Jose International Short Film Festival, because they have, like, a gorgeous theater in, God, what's the name of the district? Anyway, there's this nice part of San Jose with, like, it's all walkable, and there's a Tesla store right by there. I made a joke about that, because I was like, anyone want to finance my movie? You have a fucking Tesla store right there. but, so, like, that one, the movie sounded and looked amazing, but it ranges from anything. There's ones that want a stereo mix, there's ones that want a 5.1 mix. It's screened off of like a compressed MP4 download, which honestly, when it's on some of these smaller theaters, it kind of doesn't matter. You're not going to see a difference, but sometimes they'll want a super high res, like in the case of like a short, it could be like 30 to 60 gig file that they'll have you upload to a server. So it's, I've had it requested in a number of formats, and I've also had it requested where they ask you specifically to, in my case, to have the black bars burnt in. For, you know, just so like they don't screw it up. Then I've had ones request that you don't. So like I just have basically a Hightail account with each version of the movie that I've put after the experience of seeing it in the wrong aspect ratio. I have a pretty strongly worded piece about like download this one if you're going to try to fit it to like a 185 size screen. And hopefully they follow that. The last few screenings, it's been in the right ratio, but that's like a thing I didn't know I had to worry about. And I don't think it's a lack of care as much as it's really easy to overlook when you're programming.
And when you're like you said, they're creating a new file that's linking all of these things. Yeah. That's difficult. Anyway, yeah, I was fascinated to hear that. And you answered pretty much all my questions about the technical. And so, let's get into it, which I already said, but I'm saying it again. Mm-hmm. I'm making up for some past episode where I forgot to say my catchphrase, sure. Ryan, you wanted to talk about fictional movie bands.
Yeah.
And this was a very fun topic because I had a number that jumped into my head immediately. And then when I started looking up, I was like, oh my God, there's so many great bands. And of course, I have to acknowledge the fictional TV bands that we won't be talking about today, like Drive Shaft and like Dingo's Ain't My Baby from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Crucifictorious.
Crucifictorious is definitely one that, that I would have wanted to put on there. And my wife wanted me to mention the band The Color Green from the movie Girl, which I've never seen, but she was like, that was the first thing that popped into her mind. So shout out to The Color Green. But I don't know, how do we want to attack this, guys?
I can tell you what brought it to
me. Yes, let's do that.
So the backseat, I know you guys are putting it at the top of your best of the decade list. I appreciate that, but I think for journalistic integrity, we don't do that because we know each other, which you can watch on Amazon Prime now. I had to make a fictional band, and it was called Witness My Jehovah, and I made a lot of deliberate choices because I knew some of the actors had varying levels of experience, and they're supposed to be a shitty punk band anyway. So like a lot of the songs were limited to three power chords and things like that. But what put this on my mind was a few months ago, I watched Always Be My Maybe, which is fine.
Okay.
It's not a bad movie, but the band that Randall Park is in, that people go to see, I just found to be like offensively not convincing as a band. And like, they didn't even try to pretend to play their instruments. And I have their name in here somewhere, but it really stood out to me. Like, why didn't they try? It's called Hello Peril. And did either of you see the movie? It's not bad, but the band aspect of it, where they're playing, you know, they have a following in Seattle or wherever the movie takes place. And it's just like, have these people been to a concert? And like the guy playing the drums, you could see that he's not actually hitting the cymbals.
Yeah.
And this is like a pretty well produced movie. Like,
but this was, this, these were songs that were written for the movie.
I would just, I'm pretty sure it was. And
yeah, that's dodgy. It's rare when that works out.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, a lot of the bands I'm thinking of, they perform like, one of the first ones that came to mind for me is Citizen Dick from Singles, Matt Dillon's character's band. And they, like, I think when we don't really hear much of them. I think when we do hear them, they're playing like a Mudhoney song or whatever. That's like supposed to be their song, or at least he talks about a song that's a Mudhoney song. But then when Matt Dillon does, we do see him writing a song on his own. It's terrible, and it's, but it's supposed to be terrible. So, yeah, I think you definitely, I mean, Tyler and I have talked before, like if you're making a movie that's about a fictional, I don't know, photographer, it's supposed to be one of the greatest living photographers.
Yeah.
The photographs in the movie either don't show them or they better be really good.
My go-to is usually Mr. Holland's Opus, which is a movie that I don't mind. But then at the end, when they play this idea, it's like he'd been working on this bit of music for a long time, but then just did teaching to kind of pay the bills. And before you know it, that's been his whole life. And so finally, like his ex-students, like, play this bit of music and it's fine, but I was just like, oh geez, it's a good thing that teaching thing worked out, because this wasn't that great. Incidentally, I did
maybe
have
the
another
point of the whole movie we've been getting wrong is he would have written better music if he hadn't been distracted by the teaching career.
Sure. Yeah But there was another TV band, but I wanted to make sure I got the name right.
Okay.
Which is Rod Torfelson's Armada featuring Herman Menderchuk.
Yeah.
From Kids in the Hall.
She's a tramp. She's a tramp. She's a trampoline girl.
Yeah.
This also made me think of, so if you think music and photography is hard to communicate, the one thing I don't know if I've ever seen done well in movies or TV is a fake viral video.
Oh yeah.
It's always some like horseshit thing where it's like, oh, you fell down the stairs, the whole school is talking about it, and like it's it never works. Like
the best Friday Night Lights, again, when there's the it's a serious storyline where the girl is like drunk and perhaps like taking advantage of at a party, and there's a video of it that goes up. But the part that makes me laugh is the fake like Facebook or MySpace that they invented for Friday Night Lights, which is called friendpost.net.
Or Veronica Mars, which I rewatched, their equivalent of Google for the first three seasons is planetzowie.com.
But I don't know. I mean, like the fact that something called Google became something like a household name.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an alternate universe in which we're all just saying, so I zowied the movie starting time, and we've got a 7 o'clock and a 9:15.
No, they'd say the whole thing. I planned zowied it. Also, at some point, some movie or TV show is going to just call it Face Space, right? Like that actually sounds like a. Because you're combining MySpace and Facebook, and like.
It might have happened by now, but I think. Or it might have happened before, but at this point, MySpace is a distant memory. So
sure,
referencing that, it's not going to happen.
Funny People has that joke about, what is it? There is a MySpace Facebook joke that I'm not remembering at all.
James Taylor is at a MySpace event. And at one point he has to say, fuck Facebook, which is kind of amusing to hear James Taylor say that. But that's all I remember.
Yeah, I think it's fuck Facebook in the face. I think might be the line. I think did Seth Rogen like write it for him and then he said it, or anyway, but also kind of that's the other thing too that you see done poorly that I know you've talked about on the show too, is when they try to do comedy in movies.
There are so few movies in which the stand-up comedy is convincing. Obvious Child is the only one I can really think of where I actually believe that these that Jenny Slate and is it Gabe Delahaye's their best friend? Do you guys see Obvious Child?
And they're actual comics,
and they are actual comics, and I believe they're comedy because there are even movies where like what was that movie, The Hero, with Sam Elliott and Laura Prepon? Like, Ali Wong, speaking of Always Remember Maybe, and Cameron Esposito are both in it as comics doing their... But it's just so fake-seeming. Like, it's not just go do your act on stage. It's creating the sort of feel of a comedy club or a comedy theater. It's so rarely done correctly. Obvious Child is really the only one that I can really think of that did it.
I feel like The Big Sick does pretty well, but again, they're all stand-ups. When an actor does it, like my least favorite movie of the year is that movie The Last Laugh with Chevy Chase and Richard Dreyfuss, and Dreyfuss has to play like an aging comic who goes back on stage, and Dreyfus actually isn't bad as far as cadence and stage presence, but also just like the jokes they give him are just so just awful. But the audience is laughing, and I want to be like, what are you laughing at? You know this isn't funny. And then I was like, oh, right, no, they're laughing because that the script needs them to. Right. But yes, so as far as bands, back to that.
But even in the bands movies, you have the climax, or not even the climactic scene, where they'll play a show somewhere, and people are going nuts every time. They're really into it, or they're so not into it, and they're throwing bottles at the band, which, like, I guess happens sometimes, but... Yeah, that's the other thing. Even when the music can feel sort of authentic, like sometimes they'll screw up like the crowd response. And it's just like, have you gone to like a local, like a small club? Like people aren't losing their mind over like, you know, the high school band that's opening the big gig. Like, it just doesn't happen.
If the band sucks, then you just hear people talking to each other and waiting for the band they want to see.
Unless you're unless that's part of the tone of the movie. Like, for example, that thing you do with the Wonders, you know, is that the film itself is stylized to feel, to have this nostalgic feeling, and like seeing like young high school girls like freak out over this new sound and these good looking guys in the band and all that. And so the idea that they freak, I guess they don't freak out 100%, but like some of them, like it just really works for them. But again, that's a movie that's almost sort of playing the essence of that. Also, the band is really good, and the song is really good.
Literally the first two bands that came to my mind when I heard we were going to do this topic is the Wonders or the O'Neaters, and Josie and the Pussycats from the Josie and the Pussycats movie, which have something in common, which is that the songs were written or co-written by Adam Schlesinger from Fountains of Wayne. So he's like the go-to guy, I guess, for making believable good fictional movie music. Like, I've listened
and adapting to the period as well with That Thing You Do.
I have listened to the Josie and the Pussycats song. Like, I just listened to those as songs. They're really good songs. And so that gets it. What are some bands, fictional bands or movies that we would actually want to go see in concert? I'll run down a couple while you guys think about your answers. Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sex Bomb. Mm-hmm. The Ain't Rights from Green Room.
Oh yes.
Is a band that I would go see. And then here's one that I'm certain I'm the only person at this table who's seen this movie, because it played at Sundance and it hasn't officially been released in the US, but a Japanese movie called We Are Little Zombies, which is a movie about four kids who, not related, all of their parents die on the same day. They meet by happenstance at the crematorium. They all meet because their parents are all being cremated.
Why are you laughing all at this?
Because it's a fun movie. Okay. And they decide that instead of going to like either go live with relatives or go into the foster care system or whatever, they run away. They become homeless. They create musical instruments out of garbage and start a band called Little Zombies that ends up sweeping the nation and being a huge hit. It's a super fun movie called We Are Little Zombies. Right. And so the band Little Zombies, which has another thing, the song that we only see them do two songs in the movie. We see them do a cover of, is it the song called This Will Be Our Year, just Our Year, but it's by the Zombies, you know, Will Be Our Year. Anyway. And then an original song called We Are Little Zombies, which I have been humming for almost a year now. So those are my I would actually go see them bands.
Yeah, Hedwig, you just took a big one, because that's like really good music.
Yeah.
Would be good live. Not really quite a band, but anything from Inside Llewyn Davis.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
That really.
Jim and Gene.
Yeah, as far as going to see live. And then I don't know if I heard this band, I'd be like, I got to see them live. But that movie Hearts Beat Loud that came out last year with Nick Offerman.
Oh, okay.
That to me had like the most authentic portrayal of like the excitement of making music. And the music was believably like it was good, but it also like, it went like mildly, like I think it got featured on I totally might be botching what happens in the movie, but I think it gets like featured on a Spotify playlist or something. And in that movie, I actually like bought into it and be like, yeah, I could see that. And I think I would listen to them.
A number of things that come to mind for that. Hearts Beat Loud is directed by Brett Haley, who made The Hero, which had the unconvincing stand-up comedy in it. Mm-hmm. The thing about talking about Spotify and online streams whatever, reminded me, I didn't have it on my list, but Begin Again, which is not a very good movie, but it's from the same director as Once and Sing Street, which is on my list as being very good music, but I don't know. Did you see Begin Again?
I remember the music being good and the movie just, I don't remember anything.
But yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be an interesting movie, but I didn't like it.
And also with Once and Sing Street, like also the music's good with Once you have like actual singer songwriters who made the music.
Mm-hmm.
So also though, the trope that I don't think they started, but when I see it now, I hate it, is when they do the bullshit of the character being called guy and girl. Like that's the thing with these, especially going around with short films. It's like, our film's 2 minutes long. Let's just call him boy. And I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. But the Swell Season, like, I think they probably toured playing that kind of... I didn't see the documentary.
I've seen them, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, worth seeing.
Absolutely. You know what? Okay, so this is going to sound strange, because I'm sure people could say this with any musician. They're worth seeing once. I think... What? I don't even mean to do that. But, like, I think we wound up seeing them twice, and the second time's like, no, I got it. I got it the first time. Like, they're not really bringing anything new. I appreciate the passion that Glenn Hanser brings to it. What's her name? Marquetta,
something with
Inglova or something like that. I don't remember exactly, but they both do a really great job. But yeah, that almost feels like cheating, because as far as if the question is, what bands would you go see? It's like, well, these are bands that you could see, you know. Another one for me, as strange as it sounds, like, I'm a big fan of the Blues Brothers, and I would have loved to see the Blues Brothers perform, and they did perform. You know, Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi and the whole band would like go around the country and that kind of thing. So that feels kind of like a cheat. But I will say Spinal Tap. I would like to see. I would see Spinal Tap.
I feel like their concert would be too expensive.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know what? Within the reality of the movie,
okay.
Not necessarily in life. You know, in life, it's a novelty act. In the movie, like, their songs are so incredibly stupid and yet extremely catchy as well. And so I feel like I would enjoy that.
And I guess there is some version of this that I've seen, because didn't Metric do all the music for Envy Adams and Scott Pilgrim?
Yeah.
So I have seen Metric live, but I think this is before Scott Pilgrim came out. And also my friend led me to believe I was going to a punk show, and I was very confused when I was there because I hadn't heard of them. And like, it was a free ticket, so I went and I was like, oh, okay. But
yeah, The Clash of Demonhead, I remember liking the...
I don't like... I'm not a fan of Metric, so it makes sense that I don't like it. But it also kind of, within the movie, not liking The Clash of Demonhead actually kind of works for me.
Yeah.
Because they've kind of... I can say, like, oh, the point is that they're, like, they've become a big corporate rock band or whatever. Sure. Which I don't know if that's actually the intention, but that's how I can sort of align it in my mind.
I was listening to the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack with my tweaked audio earbuds, of course. Uh-huh. And yeah, like, it's, they do such a great job of here's the music from Sex Bob-omb, which is like very raw and unpolished. And then, the Clash of Demonhead, which is extremely polished. I like both. But I do think that Sex Bob-omb just like rocks harder.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That opening song, the opening title song, but also let's not forget the other, great band from Scott Pilgrim. What are they called? Crash and the Boys.
Yeah.
Like the song is called
Those Boys.
Yeah. The song is called I Am So Sad. So Very, Very Sad. And it's just the lyrics. So sad.
And then I like, I forget the name of the character, but he's like, it's not a race, guys. Yeah, man, that's a good movie.
I had one on the tip of my tongue. Well, there's a bunch of like, the 80s are a good time for fake movie bands.
Mm-hmm.
You've two that I hadn't thought of initially that came to mind while I was doing my research is Buckaroo Banzai and the Hong Kong Cavaliers from Buckaroo Banzai's Adventures Across the Eighth Dimension. And then, did you ever see Streets of Fire, the Walter Hill movie?
No.
Diane Lane plays like a sort of local girl made good who comes back to perform as Ellen Aim, is the character's name. And her music's great. I would actually go to see Ellen Aim.
One of the movies I watched to prepare for this, because what I did was I went through things kind of on my watch list of various streaming services, and I found like three movies that maybe had fictional bands, but I wasn't sure. And one of them was Smithereens from like the early 80s. doesn't really have that much of any bands in it. It's all kind of in the background, but it, like, at least, like, it felt authentic to, like, the music scene. Okay. But I was at, yeah, I got, like, an, I watched the whole thing, but I was like, oh, man, I probably should have rewatched Scott Pilgrim because I would have had more to say.
The movie I wanted to rewatch, I didn't rewatch anything for this. I'm too busy right now. But another one that's one of the first bands that came to mind is that, again, a really good band, is Crucial Taunt from Wayne's World. Mm-hmm. Tia Kerr's band, partially because that is the name of my bar trivia team. We used to be called the Shitty Beatles, which is also a Wayne's World reference, but the bar where we play every Sunday decided they were too much of a family establishment to let us call ourselves the Shitty Beatles, so we changed it to Crucial Taunt. I can't remember what's Tia Carrera's name in the movie in Wayne's World.
Oh my gosh, that's
Cassandra. Cassandra's band rocks, right?
I have not seen Wayne's World in a long time.
Oh, it's really good.
I remember not liking it at the time. I think I'd probably have a deeper appreciation for it now.
That's nuts that you didn't like it at the time.
I know.
It's so funny.
I just, as a kid, just, I don't think I got Wayne's World. I just, the sketch or the movie, I just don't think I understood, why is this funny?
Okay.
I didn't think the character had, like, a hook. Not that I would have put it that way as a kid, but...
Let's go. Sticking with the era, I'm going to name two bands that are supposed to be bad.
Okay.
Wild Stallions.
Of course.
From Villain's Head. And The Lone Rangers from Airheads, which is a movie I watched so many times as a kid. And they're
also not a good movie.
I wouldn't know because I watched it so many times when I was young that I have only positive associations with it, including there's a line in it that makes me laugh even harder now than it did then. So it must have some things going for it. There's a part, have you guys seen Airheads?
Yeah. Not in a long time. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, they're barricaded inside the radio station and because they're broadcasting, a bunch of supporters have come. So there's a huge crowd of people outside.
Yeah.
Supporting them, and the people outside start chanting at the cops, Rodney King, Rodney King. And the woman who works at the radio station, a black woman, asks Adam Sandler, why are they chanting Rodney King? And Adam Sandler goes, he's that guy.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a funny joke, right?
Yeah, sure.
All right, I've talked too much.
Ryan.
Yeah. All right. So you've got this band's in two movies, Infant Sorrow from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Get Him to the Greek, Russell Brand's character.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I think the Get Him to the Greek, the songs within there are pretty solid song, like pop rock songs, better than the movie that it's in. I'm trying to think if there's any other fictional band that's crossed over for more than one movie.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was that band that, you know, Richard Belzer's character was in, who showed up in all those shows.
Are Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem in more than one Muppet movie? Are they only in?
Yes.
Yeah, they got to be in.
The characters are. I don't know how much music they play.
Okay.
I feel like there has to be.
Yeah, I'm not trying to think who else would have crossed over. Because the... never mind.
What?
Nothing. I was going to say something that I remembered a conversation you and I had off mic before I started.
Okay.
And I'm not going to bring that up.
Another example, but it's pretty much, it's the same scene basically as in Back to the Future, Back to the Future 2 with Marvin Berry.
Marvin Berry, yeah.
Yeah. And the, I looked it up, and the Starlighters. Yeah. And then that also, in the first one, you get to hear Marty McFly's band for about 2 seconds, the Pinheads.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just playing a Huey Lewis song, right? Yeah.
So, and that's the other cheat, I think. You can't just take some other band's song.
But I honestly, it's probably better than some, like, what would probably not be a good song.
So we're looking, we're talking, because again, I mentioned like Blues Brothers, and obviously they're only playing other people's songs. So the topic that we're specifically trying to zero in on is like the music is original for the film.
I mean, that's one of the subcategories. Yeah.
Okay.
So the Marvin Berry thing makes me think of like fictional, like throwback, you know, like music that takes place or was written or sounds like it was written before. I guess that thing you do is like that.
And like the Commitments, but, right?
I never saw the Commitments.
That movie. So when the Backseat played in, I want to say Scotland, but it might've been somewhere else. Someone, like, they didn't really accuse me of ripping off that movie, but I hadn't seen it. But they were just like, you know, you like basically took beat per beat. Then like, I don't know. It's like an Alan Parker movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just, I haven't seen it, but I'm like, I don't think they have dick jokes and all that other stuff. But like this guy, like he's like, how have you not seen it? Like that is your movie. And I feel like he's probably wrong.
So a couple of the throwbacks that I thought of, this one's kind of Otis Day and the Nights from Animal House. They don't do original songs, sure, but they are. And then I had to look up his name because I forgot it, but Nick Rivers, Val Kilmer's character from Top Secret.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
He's supposed to be sort of an Elvis type. Yeah. And he's got all sorts of good songs in that movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I haven't seen this one, but Meet the Robinsons, the like animated movie, like the its computer animation came out in like 2005 or something. Mm-hmm. So my local movie theater that I went to at the time in East Brunswick, New Jersey, it was called Mega Movies. Now it's an AMC. But for years, and this went on like 5 or 6 years after that movie came out, their like pre-roll, like before a movie, was I think it was Frankie and the Frogs, and it was they did a rendition of I Heard It Through the Grapevine, except about like kicking my seat, you annoying man, I'll be on you like Jackie Chan, like basically giving you like the rules of theater etiquette. But it fucking played for years after it came out, and this was on film, so like the print was all dirty, and it was like my friend who worked at that theater, like he somewhat joking, but he said that's why he quit, because he was just tired of hearing the stupid frogs. But that one, yeah, that went on for like 5 or 6 years at the theater, and explains why, you know, it's an AMC now.
I'm gonna run through some of the, because you guys keep talking and everything reminds me of something.
I'm kind of
the Back to the Future thing reminded me of Lindsay Lohan's character's garage band from the Freaky Friday remake, who are called Pink Slip.
I don't remember any of their music. I forgot she was in a band.
The idea of music, like the Shitty Beatles are a band that you never actually hear. Mm-hmm. I don't think, do you ever actually hear Audubon in Big Lebowski?
You do. Because the Nihilists are playing it on the stereo in the parking lot.
So that doesn't count. But I forgot when I was talking about bands that are supposed to be bad, I forgot about the greatest example ever of that. It's a very brief thing, but in Ghost World, there's the band Blueshammer, which is a bunch of like college bros playing blues music
and
about like
picking cotton all day long. And it's just like, oh my gosh, that's true. Oh, that's perfect. That is such the essence of just a terrible tone deaf band.
Yeah.
Along those lines, in its weird way, I think this piece of music probably existed already, but I think it was arranged differently. So Whiplash, we have a jazz band, and you know, when they first play, because the idea is this band is supposed to be amazing and win competitions, and they do a really good job of showing like sort of the JV band, and it is a bit sloppy. Then you hear J.K. Simmons' band and it's like right on. But I will say that for me, I tend not to like, I'm not sure if that would officially counts as big band jazz.
Okay.
But it certainly is bigger than like a quartet, which tends to be what I prefer. And also just like everything is just so spot on. And I'm like, I realize that jazz isn't purely improvisational, but I tend to like something that feels more improvised. And so like the idea of this band, like everything is like down to the letter. I still enjoy it and I can still recognize that it's good. But like when I think of the stuff I like about jazz, like that band is not it.
Yeah. Did you ever see the Fabulous Baker Boys?
When I was very young, yes.
Yeah, I guess they're kind of a fictional.
Yeah,
I don't know. Musical concern. I don't know if you call them a band.
Musical concern. That's fun. So I mean, there's the movie School of Rock, which features a band called No Vacancy, which is clearly like they can't sell out fast enough. Like they just create this very. It's the band that kicked him out. And then you see them perform at the end and it's just really generic rock and all that. But I do like that in the audience, there's one guy that, like when they announced that No Vacancy won, there's one guy that's like, yeah. And I think that's a nice moment. But as far as the band itself and their original songs, they're pretty good.
And with School of Rock, by the way, if you ever get the chance to see like a local school, you know, how there's like School of Rock. Mm-hmm. I went to, oh, I had time to kill in Asbury Park, and I saw like one of the School of Rock's concerts they put on. It's like little kids playing classic rock songs and playing them well. It's incredible.
That's awesome.
I highly recommend if you ever see it coming around, because like I'm sure they do them all over.
I watch groups like that put up YouTube videos. Yeah. So I've watched multiple times. I've watched like a group of kids doing 46 and 2 by Tool. And so you've got this like 11-year-old girl singing about like picking her scabs and all the Tool stuff. But before we move on, Jack Black is a subcategory of his own.
Sure.
Because you've got School of Rock. You've also got, they have a bunch of names. My favorite is Kathleen Turner Overdrive from High Fidelity, but they're also named like
Barry Jive in the Uptown Five.
Yeah. And then there's another one, right? Or there's a reference to his previous band or something. When I was looking it up, there was a third.
Sonic Death Monkey
is the other one. And then this is kind of a cheat because it started as a TV show, but they made a movie, Tenacious D. But are Tenacious D a fictional movie band? Like, Tenacious D are a real band, aren't they?
Did they start that way?
I think it started as a comedy. I don't know. And then it was HBO, like, shorts, right? They were, like, short.
Yeah.
They're, like, 10-minute episodes. They were on HBO, but I don't know what order it goes in, but I just wanted to mention
them. Flight of the Conchords, which is somewhat similar. They were a band, I'm pretty sure, long before that.
That's a hard one. I feel like it's just, they exist at the exact same time.
Yeah. All right, I could keep going, but anybody else have
go for, I go for days.
Let's name some other ones.
All right, so not really a band, but Jackson Maine from Star Is Born.
I wrote Alley down.
Yeah, and that's somewhere where both of them, I bought their music actually being successful. And by the way, I saw that in Dolby. Like, that's the first movie I saw like at AMC with Dolby, and like it sounded like being at like a rock show. Like, it was fucking loud. And it was super cool.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw it, the theater was... was Dolby Atmos.
And along those lines, I mean, my only reason for not mentioning that is because it's like a solo act. Obviously they're playing with a band, but it's still like, you know, I would bring up Crazy Heart or Tender Mercies or something, but like I'm thinking in terms of bands, so I don't bring those up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I did put Bad Blake from Crazy Heart, right? That's his name?
Yeah.
I did put him on my list, but yeah, I guess that's not actually a band.
I'm just saying I committed to the premise, and it sounds like you guys didn't.
Yeah.
Being loosey goosey here. I got two boy bands from Pop Star Never Stop Stopping. What was the name of their band? I should have organized this better because I can't read what it says. The Style Boys is what they were called. And then this was a case of a TV show turned into a movie that I don't remember, but Together from MTV.
Which
was like, making fun of the boy band craze.
To go back to Joe's and the Pussycats, there's Du Jour. The fake boy band who died in a plane crash at the very beginning. Have you guys not seen Josie and the Pussycats?
I haven't since potentially when I was like very young.
I still haven't seen it despite having heard nothing but good things.
Yeah, it's really funny. Yeah. And Du Jour is like, it's all funny people. It's Seth, or not funny people, but people you at least. Mm-hmm. Seth Green is funny.
Sure.
But then the whole reason I took back saying it's all funny people is because who's the guy that I don't like who Seth Green and him created Robot Chicken together? You know what I'm talking about?
Is it Breckenmeyer?
Breckenmeyer, yeah.
Oh, I forget that he's involved with Robot Chicken, but
I used to go to Comic-Con every Friday. I mean, I still go to Comic-Con every year, but every Friday at Comic-Con there'd be a block of panels in the Indigo Ballroom that were like all the Adult Swim stuff. And so a number of times I sat through the Robot Chicken panel because there was something on either side of it that I wanted to. And I'm calling you out, Breckenmeyer. I find you completely obnoxious and not particularly funny. And there were a number of times that I was just like trying to focus on reading a magazine or looking at Twitter or something to not listen.
That's why I bring my tweaked audio earbuds with me to Comic-Con.
Got Almost Famous, you got Stillwater.
Yeah.
Which apparently, based off me looking on Wikipedia for 2 seconds, Peter Frampton had something to do with that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I don't remember their music at all. But
so, I mean, we did mention This is Spinal Tap, which means we can mention A Mighty Wind. We're bouncing around to different genres and stuff, but and I don't have notes, so I'm just going by what's in my head. But yeah, I guess one of them is just a duo, but then you have I think they're the New Main Street Singers, and then I forget the name of the folk Spinal Tap band. But I remember I think all of that music is so good, and even the things that are hokey are hokey in a really good way. I hate to say it, but I feel like there were a lot of nominated songs that were really good that year, but I kind of wish that Kiss at the End of the Rainbow had won best song that year instead of that Annie Lennox song from Lord of the Rings, which is fine, but come on.
Sorry, I had to look up the other member of Du Jour is Donald Faison, and what I didn't realize until just looking right now is that they're all uncredited in the movie. That's why it took me way too long to find them. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
There's also the fictional band The Ruddles.
Which I've never seen All You Need Is Cash. Never saw it.
I saw it in high school. Enjoyed it. I knew the Beatles, but I don't think I understood quite the phenomenon of the Beatles, which is kind of what that is about. But you know, they wrote their own songs, and they're pretty catchy. Like, that's the thing, is even parody stuff needs to be a little bit catchy, because you still need, there are still things that you need to accept about that world, that, you know, with something like a Mighty Wind or a Spinal Tap. Okay. Well, these acts are very popular, so I need to, so in this world, I need to conceivably believe that they would be popular, so they need to be at least a little bit good, or at least catchy.
Yeah, like, that's always the easiest thing to kind of call bullshit on, if it's not at least catchy in the movie, and people are supposedly knowing it. And I don't remember what this band sounded like, but Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist had the Jerk-Offs, which was that Michael Cera's band, Michael Cera playing in bands and movies.
That reminds me of a movie called Drive Me Crazy, with
Adrienne Grenier
and Melissa Joan Hart, and the Donnas, the band the Donnas, are in the movie, but in the movie their band is called the Electrocutes, which is also a good name.
Yeah, but that's a really good name.
Yeah. I don't know if that counts as a fictional, they're just the Donnas playing Donnas songs, but because they have they're play acting as another band, I don't know if it counts.
Well, that's something that you found, and I mean, they even reference it in that thing you do, like all these old, like all these bands from the 50s would be, it was Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters. Yeah. But like, they would do that all the time, is like these bands that were clearly signed because they're kind of like the Beatles would show up in these crappy little horror movies playing, I think, their music, but under a different name. So like, that's something that would happen pretty frequently.
And so I'll count it fictional either, but on Tremé was something really strange. One of my favorite bands, Lucero, were kind of in the background of an episode, and one of, I don't remember her name, but she's like one of the main characters throughout the series. She ends up hooking up with the singer Lucero, Ben Nichols, brother of the director Jeff Nichols. And he ends up being in like a couple, I think he's in like another episode in the background, but they never address that it's a real band or call them, but, and it's like a band with a decent following. And I thought that was weird that they'd take a real band and then use the non-actor singer in a storyline for two seconds.
The other thing I remember, obviously Tremé has a lot of real jazz people playing themselves, but also there's one part that spoke to me, and when the visiting journalist guy who's a metalhead goes to see I Hate God, and I Hate God are playing a show.
Real bad.
So I only have two more on my list, and then I'll just turn over that I can't believe I forgot. When I was talking about bands I would actually want to see live, I can't believe I forgot the Venus and Furs from Velvet Goldmine.
A
Bowie/T-Rex type of like glam band. And then we were talking about bands that are bad, and I think supposed to be bad. Hey, That's My Bike is Ethan Hawke's character's band in Reality Bites.
It's been so long since I've seen Reality Bites that I didn't remember he was in a band, though. Of course, how could he not be, given the nature of the movie? It's called Hey, That's My Bike.
Hey, That's My Bike is the name of the band. That's my list, unless I think of something else.
I got a few more. I watched just this week Frank.
Oh yeah. And what is the name of the band in that?
I think the thing is they make a joke about it, and it's hard to pronounce, but it's spelled it's the Soronprfbs.
Yeah, I don't know.
And in that movie, I bought like the music and them making it, but the one thing that felt pretty bullshitty to me is they go to South by Southwest, and at the very beginning, it's going really well. And the whole thing is, they're only supposedly, like, they have like 20-something thousand plays on YouTube. They even talk about it in the movie about how, like, that's not really that many, like, when you're sitting there. And there's, like, a whole setup of, like, yeah, people probably won't be there, no here. But then they're playing a packed room, and they're pretty into it until he, like, kind of has his meltdown.
Yeah.
Which, now, when that came out, Michael Fassbender being in it wasn't a spoiler or anything, right? Like, it was used, I feel like his name was featured in the marketing.
Was it?
I don't know, because I read when I was looking on Letterboxd, like, after watching it, because I was just curious to see what people thought. And I think it was Roger Avery wrote something about it, about, like, this big reveal of him being in the movie. It's like, I knew it was him the whole time, but I guess it's cool, but it's a reveal. Like,
I'm trying to think. Yeah, because you never see that as Michael Fassbender until the very end.
Very end, but, like, at that point, you're kind of just learning about who he is, and you see kind of, I don't know, you see a face for what's wrong with him. But yeah. It wasn't like, oh my god, it wasn't like the thing at the end of the most recent Spider-Man movie in the credits where it's like, oh shit, there's the guy. Do you know?
I didn't see it.
Oh, there's something really good.
I'm sure Tyler knows what you're referring to.
I did not see it.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't see it either?
Mm-mm.
All right, I will say it off mic, because it's the kind of thing I would be pissed if, in passing, if it was ruined for me. Mm. But it's
okay.
A character shows up, and there's an actor playing this character, and it's
you didn't
really,
see
really surprising.
What was it called? Far From Home?
Far From Home. With Jake Gyllenhaal?
Oh, sorry. I was looking at some stuff for the conversation. I thought we were still on Frank, and
oh,
we were talking about, like, the reveal. Okay. I had heard about that beforehand.
Oh, sorry. That sucks. I had no idea. So I was sitting there. Yeah. It's like, oh, wow, that's really interesting that they would do that.
Don't spoil it for people who are listening.
The people in the theater.
Yeah. Anyone who cares that probably has seen it, but you probably just.
Yeah, yeah. I'll just.
To be
I'll,
safe.
Yeah. I'll say this. The people that were in the theater with me did not know, and they were thrilled.
Yeah.
And you know what? It kind of warmed my heart, too.
Yeah, because it doesn't. There's a bunch of reasons why you wouldn't think that's going to be there.
Yeah.
And
it works so well.
Yeah, and it sets up for the next movie, presuming they go in that direction, which I feel like, knowing Marvel or superhero movies today, they'll probably barely do anything with that. But like, I want to see a whole movie of what that sets up.
Yeah, I'm interested. And we'll see, like, if that, like, I know that Marvel and Sony have, like, made their peace at this point, but at the same time, I feel like it's very tenuous.
I feel like this might actually play on the podcast. I'm going to just show David who it is. That way you'll understand the reaction. Yeah.
Character
from.
Okay. Yeah. I think I did know that actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I had no clue.
I think someone had told me that.
Really?
It was very exciting. Yeah, I was trying to think. I was thinking of TV bands, and I know that this one's, like, really obvious, but Mouse Rat from Parks and Recreation, that's Chris Pratt's band, that he's always changing the name of it. I think he lands on Mouse Rat, and we do see him play once or twice, and then we also see, on The Office, we see Kevin's police cover band, the name of which I've forgotten, but Scrantonicity, that was it. it was pretty good. But yeah, so that's all I can think of, but I'm sure there are big ones that we're missing. So listeners, that's up to you.
And one that's not actually in the movie at all, but it's my favorite movie, so I like to talk about it when I can. Ryan Reynolds in Adventureland, his band, he's supposedly in a band that I don't think you actually see, but you see him holding the guitar. And throughout the movie, he's referencing Satellite of Love, the Lou Reed song, how he played it with Lou Reed once, but he's calling it the wrong thing. And I just like to bring up that's a movie I think people should go back to.
Yeah.
It's when you don't go in expecting it to be super bad, too, the way it was marketed.
Right, right.
It's the best.
So over the summer, I teach, like, Italian kids about film. And one of the things we talk about is marketing. And so I show them, like, a number of trailers and the different types of trailers there are and that kind of thing. And then I show them the trailer for Adventureland. And I'm like, what do you guys think this movie's about? And they say, oh, well, it sounds like it's all about this fun, zany job that he has. And it's like, it is about that, maybe about 15%, but it's actually a romance, and
a
really good romance.
Drama with like an ensemble, like every character has an arc, and it's not really that funny, but it's kind of funny. And it's an 80s movie that doesn't, even though the music's all on there, like when I saw it in theaters, my friend leaned to me about 45 minutes and he's like, yo, is this in the 80s or something? And there's a title card that says 1980 something. And tangentially related to that, I've met both leads from Adventureland within the last couple of years. And it's my favorite movie. I managed not to talk to them about it because I met Kristen Stewart unexpectedly. Didn't realize it was her. Talked to her for a while about movies and was kind of being a dick because I was just like purposely going against everything she said. And I met Jesse Eisenberg last month.
Wait, why were you doing that?
Why did you do that?
All right. So to some backstory, me and my friend were going. My friend from Jersey was visiting us when I was living out here. And we went to go to karaoke at this 80s bar in Koreatown. And the thing is, you know, when you do karaoke, you're going to have a lot of drinks to get ready to do karaoke. They never called her name, and we were like getting bored, so we left, and we went to this other bar in Los Ciudad. I won't say the name of it, because I think she probably goes there, because it's like a smaller place. And we're in there, and it's dead. We've both had too many drinks, but it was like kind of a bummer. Like, it was like my friend's one of his last nights in town. So as we're going out to the parking lot, this is right when the Harvey Weinstein news was breaking, and I was telling a story about it, like a certain actor relating to that. And this group of, for lack of better terms, lesbians is what like I thought were like, we were like holding the door open for them. And they started talking to us about it. And they're my friend and who we learned was Kristen Stewart went through like two or three cigarettes over the course of this conversation. And like, I was like kind of fucking with her about like the movie. We were talking about Argo, and like, I was just advocating for him. Like, yeah, it should have won Best. Yeah, it's a fine movie. I get how it won. And like, I was bringing up like, I think I was bringing up Alan Alda when I meant to say Alan Arkin. And like, but we were having this like debate, and she had like a lot of cool opinions on stuff, but like, I don't know, I was just having fun with it, 'cause it's some stranger. So I was just purposely taking really strong stances that I didn't necessarily believe in. And she was really cool. And anyway, so the thing that made us realize it was her, so her and her friends got into a Porsche, or like a nice car, but it wasn't like a flashy nice car, but it was nice enough where it clicked for both of us as soon as they got in the car who it was. And I think they noticed us like being like, oh fuck. So the friend rolled down the window and took a picture of me and my friend, and then they drove away. And almost every time I talk movies with someone, like, it'll come up, people ask what your favorite movie is, and within the last few years I realized it was Adventureland. So I'm just so happy that didn't come up.
Yeah,
because I was gonna like bring up my humble brag with that is that Greg Mottola, the director, follows me on Twitter for some reason. I've never talked to him, but like, I'm so glad, because like, if I realized it was her or that movie, I wouldn't have. Like, I was kind of a dick, but in, like, a fun way, I think.
But it would have been, like, an embarrassing story if you had just talked about Adventureland without ever acknowledging,
also,
like...
Also, I think she would have walked away and, like, not... Like, everything I could tell from just seeing her...
I know from movies that when a celebrity is talking to somebody who either doesn't just say yes all the time or doesn't realize who they are, it's just so refreshing.
Well, that's what it was.
And you think that Ryan was on the verge of a Notting Hill type of situation.
Exactly.
And then when did you meet Jesse Eisenberg?
So this was kind of pretty cool because a lead actor from The Lost Weekend, Sam, he was in a play that Ethan Coen wrote that just played here in L.A. And our film was playing in Australia. So my girlfriend was traveling with me. So we spent 2 days in L.A. on our way to Australia. And it was the last night of the play. And I know opening night, like Brad Pitt came, like people who have been in Coen Brothers movie came. So this was the last performance. I had a feeling there might be some interesting people there. And sure enough, we see Ethan Coen a few rows ahead of us. And then I see Jesse Eisenberg come in with someone, and he has like a hat on. You tell he's not someone who like wants to necessarily be approached, and I wasn't going to say anything. And I had just rewatched Adventureland like two or 3 days before this. So I texted Sam after the play to tell him how good his performance was, because it was nuts. Like, he did this, like, he had probably like the most challenging part in the play, because it was like a series of, like, I guess, I don't know if you'd call him one, I guess, yeah, they're one acts. But he was best thing I can compare it to, he sounded like a plantation owner, and it's like in like the 1800s, like South, you know, in the U.S. and in the South states. And he's doing these like Shakespearean soliloquies. It's like a really weird, tough thing. And I had no idea this kid could like do accents or anything. Anyway, so I texted him, tell him good job. He asked if I wanted to come backstage. So I went back, and I had my girlfriend's mom with me, my girlfriend, my friend Rick. And we go backstage, and Jesse Eisenberg's there. Who's that other actor? He was on Taxi.
Judd Hirsch.
Yes, Judd Hirsch was there. It was like a weird, and it was like a small backstage. It's a
big cast in Taxi. You nailed it the first time.
Yeah.
So yeah, Judd Hirsch was there, and
you could have said Danny DeVito or Tony Danza.
Yeah.
Obviously not Andy Kaufman.
Right. Yeah.
So we're backstage in like a small area, and Sam's like, "Hey, you can have a drink or whatever." And like, I'm mostly just standing by the people I came with because like I had nothing to do with this play. And I, as much as like I like the Coen brothers' work, they're like directors that I don't know that I want or need to meet because I feel like I don't know. They seem fun. But then Sam calls me over and he's talking to me. He's like, "I want you to meet my friend." And he introduces me to his friend. This is his friend Jesse. So then so I talked to Jesse Eisenberg for like 10, 15 minutes, mostly about Australia, not really pretending to not know who he was, but also not acknowledging that, because I was introduced as like this director who just made a film with him. And like, for all he knows, like I'm making really cool stuff. So I wanted to play cool. And and the other thing with Jesse Eisenberg is he's from a town over from me. So he's like one of the few people that would know like the small town I currently live in. But that didn't come up. And then he when he said goodbye, which was like after I had talked to him for a little while, he's like, "Take an Ambien on the flight to Australia." So, yeah, both leads from Adventureland. I managed not to talk about Adventureland, although with Jesse Eisenberg, it was on my mind. And I was just playing it cool. Whereas with Kristen Stewart, I just didn't realize it was her until later, and I was very, 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 very relieved.
Should we wrap up, or we have more to talk about?
Well, as far as the topic, no, but I do know that Ryan, just look, I recognize you're a filmmaker and blah, 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 but you did say that you had a couple of detective stories to tell on the podcast.
I want to ask, do you have more fictional bands you want to talk about before we get to...
Very quick throwaways. There might be one or two. You got Dewey Cox and Walcard, which is a similar thing. And this isn't quite related, but I want to call it out where I can. Bohemian Rhapsody, obviously, about a real band. Their depiction of songwriting, where like, "All right, I'm going to fucking stomp on the floor and clap. And that's how we wrote We Will Rock You," which maybe is true because that song's pretty dumb. But I never felt bullshit more for a songwriting type thing. Because I guess it's also worth noting, while I get the attention of your loyal listener base, So for years, because I played in punk bands throughout high school and the beginning of college, but kind of backed off for a while. And for years, like sometimes a conversation would come up like with different band names. And I always said I'd call a band Sally Draper, like if I ever had like a hardcore band or a punk band. Long story short, I ended up recording something with my friend that we released as Sally Draper. And we ended up putting out a couple albums and EPs, and we still play shows a few times a year. So anyway, I want to throw that out there. You can find that on Spotify.
Yeah.
And then I've also been learning that maybe it wasn't the best name to go with, because there's a thing that I think is a good criticism where there's a lot of bands, like there's a band called Cheap Girls that's all men, and there's this big thing with men using like feminine names for their music projects.
Yeah, like Screaming Females.
Screaming Females has a woman in it.
Oh, it does. Okay. Yeah, there's a band called Women that I think, right? Is that all men? I think.
I believe usually it is. And like my defense is with Sally Draper. It's like, I just think it's a cool character from a show that I really like. And I've only had one person actually say something to me about it, and they were doing it to start shit. They weren't like trying to make a point. Because I think the bigger issue is when, and you know, I'm just a dude talking about this, so what do I know? But it is like the case of Cheap Girls. Hard Girls is another band that's really good that I like, but also the same thing.
Okay.
But almost every single time there's a band with girls or women or female in the name, it tends to be dudes. And
it reminds me of one that I missed, which is, I don't think they're ever actually named in the movie, but in the books, the Harry Potter books, they're called the Weird Sisters, the band that plays the prom, or when it's not called the prom, whatever it's called, the Yule, what's it called?
The Yule Ball. Yeah. That's a band I don't like.
Yeah. They're called the Weird Sisters, but it's all men, including some pretty famous, Jarvis Cocker and Johnny Greenwood, and some others,
have you guys
heard? So Harry Potter was ahead of this trend is what I'm saying.
Have either of you heard the song that Bruce Springsteen wrote for the Harry Potter, like the first movie? And I love Bruce Springsteen, but it would be horrible in that movie. Like it only came out.
Of course.
Yeah. It got released within like the last year or two. And I think it's not called I'll Stand By You, but it's something pretty broad and generic. And I remember hearing it just like, oh wow. Because every now and then Bruce isn't, you know, doesn't misses. But
I just want to hear him sing like Spells.
It's not even that interesting, unfortunately. But
did you ever see because you know the story that he wrote Hungry Heart like for the Ramones, and they said no thanks, you should take that. But when he was on the Jimmy Fallon show, whatever. I guess it's called The Tonight Show, but yeah. I don't know. Conan O'Brien's the host of The Tonight Show. Yeah, I'm still 10 years on. I'm still hanging out
of the podcast.
Yeah, he invented podcasting. But when he was on Jimmy Fallon, The Roots played like a verse and a chorus from Hungry Heart in the style of the Ramones.
That's cool.
That's neat.
They also, speaking of The Roots, they also took a pretty obscure Weezer song when I think Amy Poehler or someone, was there a movie called Smart Girls or something along those lines that came out within the last couple of years, or it was a movie about some, anyway, they played that, like an instrumental of that, and I thought that was so cool because that's like a Weezer song off one of their less respected albums. I could talk about Weezer all day. I remember you guys were talking about it a couple of months ago, and I was kind of like, I wanted to like call in, which I know isn't a thing, to tell you the White Album, Everything Will Be All Right in the End. Those two albums came out within like the last 6 or 7 years and are great.
I'm not a big Weezer fan after Pinkerton, like most people, or like most snobs.
Do you know what their next record's called?
No,
Van Weezer, and it's the single they released sounds like Van Halen and Weezer combined.
Okay, all right.
It's awesome.
Although speaking of obscure Weezer tracks, there was a compilation called DGC Rarities that had a Weezer song called Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie's on. That's a great song.
It's a really good song.
Yeah, it's from the Blue Album era.
You can kind of tell. You can kind of like pick out bits of Jamie that show up. Yeah. And other Blue Album songs, but it was a really good song. Okay, I thought of another one. Sorry, I know I said I was done, but that's the fine. Movie it's a weird, okay, not great movie called Grace of My Heart, in which Ileana Douglas plays a fictional character, but it's clearly Carole King. Like, it's clearly based on the life of Carole King. And then Matt Dillon, again from Citizen Dick, plays someone who's clearly Brian Wilson, mm-hmm. but is not called Brian Wilson in the movie, and that has a. Anyway, that
I thought of another one
too. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know if the band has a name in the movie. They might. Unlovable with John Hawkes. And
I don't think they do have a name.
Yeah, but in that, at least, that was another one where I was like, oh, this feels real and like makes sense.
But didn't John Hawkes like write or co-write, like, probably, actually write those songs? Yeah.
So you could, because that's the other thing that we were talking about before too. You can tell when they have who's the guy who did Crazy Heart and seems to like basically make a second living off of writing, like
Ryan Bingham.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's
here's it. Why I know that. That was 2009, same year as Up in the Air. George Clooney's character's name is Ryan Bingham.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's very strange.
And he was nominated, and then the other Ryan Bingham was nominated for, I think, was it Crazy Heart?
He won song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Stuff like that is fun. Also, I haven't seen Her Smell, but isn't she part of the band in that?
Yeah. Something. What is the name of the band in Her Smell?
I haven't seen it.
Something She. She something? I can't remember. But yeah, there's a number of bands in there. Yeah, good stuff. All right. Do we have any more? Tyler wants to get to these private detective stories.
Some Dick Tales.
Ooh.
Yeah, available on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. What do we got?
Okay. So I got to be careful because I'm still at this point doing that for my living. And one thing, not the most interesting story, but when I was working as a private investigator out here in LA, I was working in this one neighborhood, and I noticed one thing that was pretty weird. I saw someone on their lawn for sale. They had a bunch of merch from bands like The Descendants and like different punk and like metal and rock bands, but like an inventory of stuff. Like, it wasn't someone's clothes. It was and I looked into it because, you know, I was dicking. I had to do stuff. Uh-huh. And it was all from this company, Cinderblock. Anyway, that should have been a sign that maybe I was in a questionable neighborhood. Maybe not. So when I'm working, I'm sitting in my car. And if it's hot out, my windows might be down a little. And this person approached me asking me who I was and what I was doing. It was someone kind of scary. So I was honest because I didn't want anything to happen. And depending on what company you work for, and I think generally speaking, you're supposed to call the police and say you have a code 5, and then they ask for your license plate. And it's basically so if they get a call about a suspicious car, they know it's a private investigator. And, you don't always really need to do that, but it's company policy for the company I was working for. And that time I hadn't called yet, but I did. And the cop told me, he's like, oh, you're in whatever this neighborhood, like specific cross streets. He said, go somewhere else. There's been like multiple officer involved shootings there this week. just leave. So I did, I had to leave, and it was scary, but also, yeah, okay, I can't say certain things about them. But anyway, I left, and I'm still alive. Now, on to a couple of sort of interesting stories. This one also happened out here. So I was following this woman, and you could kind of tell that she wasn't all there mentally, and I think that's had to do with whatever disability she was claiming or whatever. And I followed her all the way from, I followed her to Redondo Beach, and it was pretty far from where she was. And she parked her car, I want to say, about a mile or two from the beach. And so I had to follow her on foot to the beach. And eventually I get there, and she's doing her laundry, because she's carrying like a laundry basket. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe she's working as a housekeeper on the side while still, you know, taking insurance money, which like you're not supposed to do. But no, she was doing her laundry with the public water. And this woman drove like a Lexus or a Mercedes, and her other car was also a high-end car. So it was very bizarre. And she strips down to like her underwear, and this is in public during the day in a busy area. And like, I, you know, I'm getting video of this woman doing this, and she's doing her laundry with like the water outside the public restroom on the beach, which is miles and miles from her home. Like, it, none of it made any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And she did this for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then went home. And on her way home, she parked at, I want to say, like a Wendy's or a McDonald's, then walked about like 8 or 9 blocks, got in a different car, which she drove home. Like, all this weird stuff. And it turns out this case, so I get a call about it, and this was like one of the longest days ever, because it was like a 17-hour day, because she came out at the very end of when I was supposed to be working. And the whole thing is you stay with the person until mm-hmm. they go home. So like, this is a story that I told a lot of people, and then I eventually, you know, moved back to New Jersey, and I get the call that it's going to trial, and they were going to potentially fly me out here as like a witness. And they ended up just, I guess her lawyers, when they saw the video, they just dropped her as a client, because it's like, you're clearly doing shit you're not supposed to. But also it felt weird, because like, to me,
but she hasn't broken the law at any of this.
I think she's still trying to get some claim, because she was probably saying she was too unwell to drive and like all this other stuff. And she's carrying a huge bag of laundry for like miles on foot. And it was just the most bizarre thing. And they ended up dropping her as a client. And I don't know what she's up to now. But it was looking like they were going to fly me out here to just show up in court one day and to be like, yeah, that happened.
So is it legal in California to video someone without their consent?
It's complicated. So different states have different laws, especially with audio. Like, you can't just record audio of someone without them knowing in a lot of states. But other states you can. New York, I know, is really hard one way or the other on the issue. But it's this weird thing where I think you can hire someone. I feel like when you take a disability paycheck or something, you're probably, and I could be wrong, I should know more about this, but I don't want to do this forever, so I'm trying not to get too used to it, although it's been many years at this point. I do think you sign away probably certain rights. And the other thing is, people know, sometimes, I don't know if you guys saw Marriage Story yet,
no,
but there's a line in that from one of the lawyer characters in the movie tells Adam Driver, it's like, you know, someone might be following you, and it's true. So like, I think, like, it's obviously it's legal because that's how I make a living. Yeah. And so most of my cases end up being disability type stuff. And then sometimes there's things like people having affairs and everything. And those, they can be more interesting, but I like the insurance ones because I have more of a predictable schedule and can like have a life. Like, because I'll just know if the person's home at 2 o'clock that afternoon, I want to stay. When you do like the domestic cases, the client will ask you to stay for like 10 more hours. And there's also, like, on the subject of domestic cases, there's one that we're working. I got to be vague enough with this because it just started again, although I'm not really working it anymore because I was sort of caught, because this was someone's boyfriend who I think he was considering or is considering marrying this person who happens to be a model and like an Instagram influencer, and he's worth a lot of money. So he's spending anywhere, like, he's got to be spending $5,000 to $15,000 a month on surveillance with her. And he would sometimes have us follow her when he was with her, which made no sense.
This is a recipe for a successful marriage, by the way, yeah. This level of trust.
So with that case, what would suck about that is it would always be last second, and they'd be like, can you stay for a few more hours? And like, she didn't go anywhere. And also, she like never did anything remotely shady in the times that I was following her. But like, that's why, yeah, like, I definitely prefer the more boring, people because the other.
But you said you got caught doing that. You got made. Is that the?
Yeah, you got made.
Oh boy.
And it happens every now and then. It's in a weird way. It's more exciting than when you don't, because sometimes the people will follow you and you're being chased. But basically, yeah, because this is what happens when you have someone tailing the same person for, at this point, like 2 years, like once or twice a week or more.
Yeah.
Someone's going to notice. And I guess she had a friend on the police department in her town who was able to run my plates. Mm-hmm. And anyway, long story short, I can't work that case anymore.
I see.
And so, yeah, I got made that time.
Wait, so 2 years? This guy still hadn't made up his mind about whether or not to pop the question to
the love of his life, obviously. People assume that we ask all these questions, but it's like a really steady paycheck. And usually, I think, and obviously, like, I don't handle this side of the business, but I'd imagine on domestic cases, you can pull shit where you're just like, because it's super last second sometimes. So, like, you could just increase the rate and be like, yeah, you're calling us in on Thanksgiving. Mm. Give us this much. And they'll usually do it because they're desperate. But yeah, it's a weird one and definitely not a person you would want to date or whatever.
Yeah.
But although there is part of me, like, as an independent filmmaker, I'm like, I should see if this guy likes movies. I've been learning that's somehow that's the conversation to raise money, like in smaller amounts. And then I guess one other sort of interesting story, and this one's pretty recent. This is an insurance case. And the guy was claiming something very specific to, I want to say, like his left hand. And he's an older guy. And I followed him pretty far. And he goes to like an adult community. So like people over the age of like 50. And it's like a softball league. And at first he's just watching. But then he starts playing. And he's playing softball. He played like 3 games. And he's playing for hours. And so I'm getting video of this guy clearly in shape where he could work his job. And in his last game, he was the last one up to bat, so it's like a metal bat. He swings, he misses, he gets pissed. So first he takes both hands and smashes the bat on the ground. And then about a minute or two later, I got him with the supposed injured hand hitting the bat again really hard. And so like that was one time where it actually felt like, oh, I got something with my job that doesn't feel terrible, because like, you know, kind of fuck this guy, because whatever, he's taking money.
It's an open and shut case.
Yeah, and it's very clear that it's there. And so many of the times too, it's not like, I think by policy, it's not like every single person you go out to follow is faking something. It's just they have to check because they're spending so much money. Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine if they're paying the rates you pay any private investigating company, like,
so is it more often than not the person is fine?
I find it so, but then there's also things where because you're not supposed to be partial in any way. So it's not like I'm saying, you know, I'm saying this guy's guilty or something. So I'm just documenting what happens. And sometimes even when I'm doing my reports, like I should, you know, I usually do look into what the injury is. So I could like say they didn't use a cane or did. But yeah, I feel like it's, I want to say like 60% of the time it doesn't seem like they are. But I don't know. Then there's other times where I might not realize or might not remember when I'm doing the report that like they said they couldn't drive and then they're driving everywhere. But a lot of times it's nothing, and it's kind of nice when that's the case. But also that could be frustrating too, because then you have your client being like, why haven't you seen them? And I don't know about you guys, but like I have days where I don't leave the house or I don't leave before a certain time of day. And like, right. That's something that gets frustrating with the job too, is they have you start early, at least at the beginning of cases all the time, because they want you to catch if someone's working a job. Because that's like the biggest shitty thing, is when someone's getting some sort of disability payment and then working a manual labor job on top of it that they're lying about. So like usually I have to start at like 6 in the morning, 5 in the morning. And but what gets frustrating about that is a lot of times they'll have me on like younger people in like their younger 20s, and they'll send me home because there's been no activity at like 10 in the morning. It's like,
right,
a fucking 21 year old's not getting up before 10. Like,
now I have, every time I go to the gym, in the gym parking lot, there's always the same other car there. And it's a very bright red Mustang. So am I being followed by the world's worst private detective?
Yes. No, well, that's the weird thing.
It's all I could afford, David.
So the big,
I want to see if you're podcasting with anyone else.
This is like some horseshit too. This bigger company I was working for directly when I was living out here, for a brief period of time, they had this operations manager who was like a total asshole. He was breathing down everyone's neck. He was telling, instead of just like, you know, talking to the investigators about just like leaving it at what they were doing wrong or what he wasn't happy with, he would tell the people in house, like, don't give cases to this person. And the thing is, when you're depending on that for your living and you're suddenly working like 4 or 5 hours in a week, it's really fucked up. Like, they should just tell you, hey, we're not giving you work. Anyway, this guy, one of his bragging points about being such a good investor, because he always referred to it as playing James Bond, which it's not. It's not that exciting. It's not that cool. But he's like, when I was
incidentally,
younger,
he's never seen a James Bond movie.
Yeah, he doesn't, like, I don't think he's like shooting people or anything. So he, but he, his bragging point was that he drove a yellow minivan, and he's like, people would never see it coming. And I was like, ah, you're just a dick. And the
That's
same
stupid.
Guy.
I would notice the yellow minivan if I saw it more than once.
The same guy did, like, so there's one case that I was doing where it was in an apartment building, which is always challenging, especially a big one. And this was kind of near downtown LA. And he was getting frustrated that I hadn't seen the person come out yet, but it's like they had an indoor parking garage. So, like, there's just a number of reasons why it's difficult. So he went in without, on a day that I wasn't working, and he's like, I got them. But what he did was he, like, weaseled his way into the building, knocked on the person's door, and he had a hidden camera, and he took a picture of the person's, like, child, like a 10-year-old who answered the door. I was like, that's fucking creepy.
Yeah.
Like, anyway, but that guy lasted, like, less than 2 months at the company, and they let him go. But anyway, that's, like, the side of the drama of this business they don't talk about is, like, especially if you have one place employee. So basically, most private investigators work for a number of people and clients because, one, it could slow down genuinely, and then the other thing is, unless you do something really bad, they don't let you go. They'll just slow down giving you work. And there's, like, I could see how someone who, like, you know, if you have kids or something, like, for me, it's great just because I could take time off. But also, like, yeah, you could just suddenly not have a job. Or And then some months are really just slow. Like, the insurance company people, they go on Christmas vacation and stuff, too. So the months, the weeks leading up to Christmas and then the beginning of January is always pretty much dead. So you got to count on not working. And yeah.
Well, at least you don't have that to worry about right now because you've got this film that you're
the Lost Weekend
that you're turning around.
Lost Weekend, covering it. And, you know, our distributor from the backseat, which I don't think exists anymore, but the movie's on Amazon. So
there you go.
You know, I'm getting, not getting those royalties from people streaming it, but
yeah, go watch The Backseat to not pay Ryan's bills.
You know, best of the decade. Thank you guys for that.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Please don't actually put it on your list. Like,
well, you can find us at battleshippretension.com. That's where you can find all sorts of I'm trying to think, it's only been a couple days since we last recorded, so the same stuff,
and it's gonna be a week until this goes up.
Oh yeah that's right. So you'll have reviews this week from me of Queen and Slim and the Two Popes, maybe some other stuff. I can't remember what else is going up this week.
I think of me 1917, right?
Is that this week?
I think so.
Okay. So you have those reviews up at BattleshipRetention.com. You can email us at David@BattleshipRetention.com or Tyler@BattleshipRetention.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter at DavyPretension. You can follow Tyler at TylerPretension. Mm-hmm. Anything else to plug, Tyler?
Not that I'm aware of. Head on over to MoreThanOneLesson.com and just see what's there, because I don't actually know right now.
What's on the Patreon this week?
Patreon is a mailbag.
Oh, those are always fun. People like the mailbags. You can listen. You can find that at patreon.com/battleshipretention. Tiers start as low as $2 a month. Go up to $10 a month if you want to see our beautiful faces. And, you know, subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. It helps. I don't know. I feel like such a fucking whore saying
that. And check out our, we do also have a YouTube channel. We don't add stuff to it, but we do have some good stuff on there.
Sure. Why not?
So, and also, like,
can't hurt.
Alexander Miller, does, like, trailer reactions for trailers of movies that you have not heard of.
Yeah, he did The President's Last Bang, which is a 2005 Korean movie, I think.
Yeah.
So that's, you can find all that stuff. Ryan, you can find the, like you said, you can see The Lost Weekend touring the world. You can see The Backseat on Amazon, anywhere else people can find you.
Yeah, at The Bloody Mess on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd, where my reviews, I try to think of, like, while I'm in the theater before it starts, and it's always something that's like a sentence and really stupid and probably problematic to some people. But I'm sort of proud of the Letterboxd account. It does not reflect my opinions of the films, but I like to have fun with that.
So they're actually films that you have seen, but the reviews were composed before you saw them.
Yeah. So what I do is what appealed to me most about Letterboxd initially was just tracking everything I've watched. Because, like, when I go on, like, some of my friends' podcasts, that's what they'll want to talk about. So I just figure, all right, I'm going to write something really, really stupid. I think for when I saw Three Billboards, when that was playing, the review was just something like, you could watch this with three bills and not get bored. Just I try to think of the stupidest thing
there you
I could
go.
Put. And I did put something pretty questionable about Ford v. Ferrari.
Well, let's leave that to people to discover for themselves at the bloody mess. Thank you, Ryan, for being here.
He just whispered, you're welcome.
Thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.